Welcome to Start of the Pot Sports, presented by CMG Podcast and Rocky Hill Accountants. I'm your host, JJ Vargas, alongside my brother, Sandra Sanchez. How you doing, man?
Doing good, baby. Had a good weekend. Right. How about you?
Me too, man. And I had a whole show lined up, ready, excited to start the week. Had it all lined up, Sandra. And then, like 10, 15 minutes ago, we get news that somebody got paid. So, do you know that's exactly where we're going to start, man? Luka Doncic, man, that bad boy out of Slovenia who came short of winning a medal for his country. You know, he was definitely very emotional about it. But he has signed a 5-year, $207 million super max rookie extension with the Dallas Mavericks. Mark Cuban himself went out to Slovenia after the Olympics was done to make sure that he met up with Luka to be like, yo, let's get this deal done. And they got it done. And I'm very happy for this young man. Only a 22-year-old guy getting this max extension, Sander. And a lot of people are thinking like, oh, he's only 22. You know, like, how is he already do what for this max extension? Well, there's a reason why. Luka Doncic became the first player that was eligible for this rookie max extension because he's already made the All-NBA first team twice, which made him eligible because of it. First player to ever do it, a 22-year-old, Sander. So that just shows you how elite Luka Doncic is even at his young age. But nonetheless, the reaction to him getting paid and what's next for the Dallas Mavericks with Luka?
Well, congratulations, Luka, because you're getting that shmoney, baby, for real. And guys, what do you expect, Jake? Come on now. Like, the kid is a phenomenal talent. You saw what he did single-handedly on that Slovenia team in the Olympics. I'm pretty sure Mark Cuban saw his gameplay and was like, I got to make sure I keep that guy. And the fact that he flew all the way to Slovenia, that's big boss moves right there, man. You don't fly to Slovenia and come back empty-handed. You understand what I'm saying? So yeah. The fact that he did that, you know, all power to him. Dallas, you got your superstar. You got him locked in. Now it's the next step. And what I mean the next step is getting him another guy, a running mate, a Robin to his Batman, because Luka is phenomenal as he is in that stacked West, because we all know it's stacked and it's always a rough road to the finals. If you don't have a running mate with you, then you're going to see the results that have been happening in the past two playoffs with Luka falling short in the first round, not being able to get over that hump because he doesn't have another solidified running mate. When you have a superstar, especially how this league is going, you need another at least all-star caliber player to help him. And, you know, you've seen it with Giannis and Middleton. You've seen it now with, you know, the Lakers, what they're trying to do with Russ. You see it with Stephen Clay. You know, they got those guys to help him out. Luka needs that guy because Porzingis, Jay, I'm sorry, but he ain't it. He ain't it. He was special at the beginning, but I feel like just the way he plays, it just doesn't work with Luka. And I'm going to say this right now. I feel like the Dallas Mavericks have to move on from Porzingis and use him to get another piece to add on. Because I'll tell you this, he signed his 5-year max. You have 5 years to deliver a championship. Because I feel like he's of the mind that, yeah, I'll take this super max because I'm not going to turn down $200 million, especially at 22. But what I will say is this, after this contract is done, depending on how the success of the Dallas Mavericks have been through that length of the contract, Luka's going to definitely have his options open. Because if they throw in $200 million right now, and he's literally just entering his prime. So by the time this contract is done, he's going to be, what, 27 years old? He's still going to be prime time Luka. Yeah. So listen, if the trajectory of the Dallas Mavericks within this length of the contract isn't at least an appearance at the finals, but check this out. If Luka can do it without a superstar, I understand. But if he doesn't have a superstar and you expect him to continue to follow that, like, my man, this isn't LeBron back with Cleveland, especially back then in the league that was a little bit watered down as compared to now, where the talent is through the roof. So Luka is going to need another guy. If the Dallas Mavericks and Mark Cuban can't figure out how to bring him another guy, I see Luka maybe even taking it because he has a little bit of diva in him. Let's not act like he's this angel. He has a little bit of diva in him. Yeah. I feel like if it gets to the point where the Dallas Mavericks are stagnant and not progressing and taking steps to better and better, by the end of this contract, he might just collect it and be out, because there's going to be teams lined up the wazoo just to sign this kid. Okay, so
especially at 27 years old,
100%, bro. This man, by the time this contract is done, he's still gonna be in his prime. So, like I said, Jay, the next step is signing a superstar, because if you don't bring this man some help and you expect him to do magic in the West by himself, it's not gonna end well for the Dallas Mavericks. This isn't gonna be a Dirk Nowitzki Cinderella run. It's not gonna happen, especially nowadays. So get this man some help. If not, he might pack his bags and bounce.
Yeah, I agree. And before I start, you know, I'm so happy for Luka Doncic. Anybody that follows the show and knows me personally know that I love Luka. So I'm very happy for him. And I'm very happy that now I feel security that now I could go buy a Luka Doncic jersey, knowing that my man's going to be there for at least the next 5 years. And I'm happy that he is. But what's next for Dallas? Absolutely. You got to go pair him up with a guy. And the best move to do it with is, as you mentioned, Santa, you gotta use Porzingis as a trade bait option, to at least, because he is a valuable player. He does have some value with this league. He is a stretch four or even a stretch five if you want to put him at center, because he does have the body to do it. And he stands, what, 7'1", 7'2", with a crazy wingspan. Porzingis is definitely valuable in today's NBA. You'll definitely get something for him. So, yeah, definitely just find a more suitable, more compatible superstar to match. It doesn't even have to be a superstar, because Luka Doncic just carry the superstar duty on himself. I mean, if you could get one, sure. But just get him at least a star reliable guy, a tier two guy that you know could give him 20-plus on a consistent basis. And if you're Dallas, you got something cooking. Because let's be honest now, the last couple of years, Standard, they've been held back because of the Clippers. And even though they played them in valiant efforts, they came up short. And we know now, with knowledge, Kawhi Leonard's not going to be there next year. So let's just say if they were to bump into the Clippers again, just somehow in the seeding, you know, you feel more confident that Dallas has a better chance of winning that series just because Kawhi won't be there, and you'll be dealing with Paul George and Reggie Jackson, who just recently signed to stay with them. I think that was a great move for the Clippers to keep Reggie Jackson in-house, because I think that was one of the better guys that plays for them. So I'm glad that they made that move happen. But, yeah, Sander, in the duration of the 5 years of this contract, you got to at least hope, at least for a finals appearance. It's kind of hard in the West. I know I said two earlier. That might be a stretch, but definitely make some noise. Get out of the first round. Luka Doncic is already recognized as one of the top five players. Listen, the kid even got a 2K cover this year. I'm so happy for him. He's just everywhere. You know what I mean? I know he wishes he could at least buy the bronze home back to Slovenia, but he will have another chance. Two years before he has to renegotiate his contract again, because he will be playing again for Slovenia. We know that now. He's going to be playing for Slovenia for years to come. But, yeah, use Porzingis. Try to go get somebody out there.
Yeah, because you look at that roster, Jay, and it's just as great as Luka is as a talent, it's just you look at that roster and it's such a major fall off from talent perspective, from Luka to the second best player on that team.
Yeah, whenever they bust Hardaway back in, but he's Tim Hardaway Jr.
Exactly. Like when you rank the Dallas Mavericks, right? When you look at the top four players in series, right? And you look at the Dallas Mavericks versus any of those playoff teams, it's really Luka and the next team's best player, and then the next team's best player and best player. It's like you're not gonna win with Porzingis, especially Porzingis. But if Tim Hardaway is your second fiddle or your third fiddle, he's a really good player. He can put up points. But if you're expecting him to be a Middleton or a Jrue Holiday type of role on your team, you're only going to get so far.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And the thing is that if you do give up Porzingis in a trade, you are going to lack size. They did bring back Boban Bogdanovic. I hope I got his name right. We all know who he is. Our gentle giant. We love the guy. Anybody who doesn't know who he is, he's that big NBA player in the Goldfish commercials who breaks the bag when he's playing with Tobias Harris. Love the guy in that commercial, you know what I mean? But, you know, so at least you got a little depth and size there, even though you don't want him to be your starting center. He at least provides an alternative option at the moment. Yeah. But, you know, who do you think will be, like, a good fit, though? Like, you know, like, obviously, let's just say you got Porzingis as the trade. He's the one, like, if you're doing the trade, he's, like, your green guy, you know what I mean, that you could put on a trade out there. So who do you think you will pair with Luka? Like, who do you think will be a nice 1-2 punch with Luka right
well,
now?
Well, if I was playing God, you know, I would sprinkle in a few players. You know, I'd throw in maybe a CJ McCollum because of the situation that's going to happen with Portland and Dame Lillard. Maybe CJ McCollum doesn't want to be there anymore.
Why not reach for Dame Lillard?
But because the Damian Lillard and his camp are having conversations with some way bringing him to Golden State. And I think his second option would be the New York Knicks before Dallas. That's just a rumor, though. But if Luka could maybe have a guy like CJ McCollum, or I'll even go a tier above CJ McCollum, maybe a Zion Williamson in Dallas with Luka, the way Zion Williamson wants to get out of New Orleans, that talent is not, you know, that's some under the rug talent that needs to get polished. And I think with a guy like Luka, you can unlock a guy like Zion Williamson. But, you know, that's just a few players. It's just, quite honestly, JJ, I don't think the Dallas Mavericks are that much of an attraction to lure really star, like, top tier players. So it's really going to be like a lot of overpaying for Dallas. But, you know, maybe if they could try and get a CJ McCollum, that's good enough.
I'll
CJ McCollum is good enough.
Absolutely. I think CJ would definitely be a nice running mate. I think he should be more like your 3 on a championship caliber team, but he's definitely a great piece for any team. But listen, if I'm Dallas, you know what's a nice attraction there? There ain't no income tax. So your whole contract going to be guaranteed. So you see that $207 million that Luka's getting? The government ain't getting none of that. So that's all money in the bank. And you know, and let's be real. This is Mark Cuban. This is Shark Tank guy. $207 million. You know he slid him an extra 3. Like, yo, I'm gonna give you 210, but I need to put it on paper. It's only going to be 207. I mean? So, listen, I'm very happy for Luka. I can't wait to see him again next year. Like I said, he's the 2K cover athlete now, too. So he got a lot going on. Shout out to
You're definitely buying that cover.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm getting the jersey now. I already told my fiance, I'm already going to go.
Which one,
get
the Slovenia or the Dallas Mavericks? Because
no, the Dallas Maverick. I'm just conflicted. I don't know if I want the crispy away white one or I want the home one. I don't know. A lot to be determined of. But nonetheless, but the Slovenian one will be pretty cool. But now, speaking of him competing in Slovenia, though, the whole Tokyo Olympics was awesome, but unfortunately it had to come to an end. But it really was a great ceremony. And shout out to the Team USA basketball teams, not only the man, but the woman too, because they both brought gold home. And we couldn't be more proud of them. You see the guys there. You know, you got Draymond literally about to take a whole Reese's cup chunk right out of that thing. He looked like they're really buying that too. You see Dame Lillard.
Yeah, they are. They're making sure it's real.
Jason Tatum. I see look, Jrue Holiday, Devin Booker. Nonetheless, shout out to them. You know, and the girls were great too, like I said. They're keeping it a little more classy. Freaks with it. Oh, yeah. Look at my girl Breonna Stewart. Gold medal.
I see Skyler. Where my girl Skyler Diggins at? I see her.
Yeah, you see Taurasi. You know, shout out to Sue Bird and Taurasi too, being the OGs. And then Sue Bird came out saying that she is retiring after that. So this will be the last time we see her on the Olympics. So nonetheless, great running girl. But, you know, the NBA stars definitely shine, Sander. And it really came up, you know, KD was a big guy in that last game, dropping 30 points to get us to beat France in a redemption game, really, because France beat us earlier. But, you know, we Team USA, we're like, yo, we'll let you get this one. We're going to come back. And we're going to get that dub. But nonetheless, which NBA star impressed you the most during this Olympics run?
Well, I want to just start off by saying that the entire United States Olympic Association impressed me by having not only the most golds, but the most medals in total. They blew every country out the water in the Olympics. And I was so happy, baby. I was so happy. And shouts to the women's basketball team. 7 straight gold medals, and it 7, man, not 1 in a row, not 2 in a row, 7 in a row. Shout outs to the GOAT, Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird, baby. We love you so much. Thank you for what you've done for the sport.
And baby,
we
love Brianna.
Baby, go Brianna. All of you women, we appreciate everything, because listen, this entire Olympics, for every single country, we're still dealing with the pandemic. So the fact that every country that was available to participate was able to send their representatives out there and give us a beautiful Olympic Games. I'm just so thankful. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Tokyo, because this one was different than a lot of the past ones, especially with the circumstances. So, but nonetheless, getting it back to the men's basketball team, boy, I had them winning gold from the beginning, bro. I wasn't worried about the 2 losses. I wasn't worried about the loss to Nigeria. I wasn't worried about the loss to France, baby. I knew my team was going to come through. Damian Lillard woke Durant up because, listen to me, when you ask me who was the MVP of Team USA men's basketball, it's KD the Snake, no doubt about it, baby. This man, after that loss, I feel like he had an epiphany. And he figured, hey, can't nobody in the world hold me? And from that France game, he has not scored under 22 points. Yep. As a matter of fact, you touched on it on that closing game. He gave you a nice 30-piece to close it out. Send yep. Evan Fournier to New York with aspirations that he's going to be the player that they paid him to be. So, listen, I'm so happy about it, guys.
And Gobert, remember?
Oh, and Gobert. Oh, Gobert. Oh, man, crying on the court. Like, yeah, listen, man. I was so happy. Jace, I'm sorry, baby, but your man wasn't going to win gold, bro. I'm sorry, bro. Especially a country that finished, what, last in gold, in total medals. Do you think they really had a chance? No hey, chance is what they
got him in fourth place, okay?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I give more credit to Luka, what he did with Slovenia, than France, what they did in the Olympics. But that's another debate. Listen, guy, listen. JJ, Kevin Durant flipped the switch, baby. After that France loss, it was just him on a tear, being the best basketball player in the world in the Olympics, just showing out. No one could hold them. Draymond Green played unbelievable post defense. You look at Draymond Green throughout his career, and you're like, how the hell does that man play center? And how is he always in the running or top four, at least, in Defensive Player of the Year voting? And then you watch him play defense, and you realize, damn, this man could guard. Jrue Holiday. Flipping another switch that straight up bullied every single guard that he played against, made him look like, oh, damn, wait, I hand check? Oh, we could play 90s basketball in the Olympics, bro? Oh, I'm doing that all day. And I was mind blown by the goaltending rule. I did not know that all you have to do is let it touch the rim and you can slap it out. I did not know that. And the fact that they were just taking advantage of it, bro, all power to Team USA. They figured it out. They knew that in order for them to win, they had to be they had to show and prove that they are the best athletes in the world for a reason. So I'm so happy for Team United States. Happy for Simone Biles. Thank you for what you did in the Olympics. Thank you for Kevin Durant for showing out. Thank you for Diana Taurasi. Just thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Tokyo Olympics, period.
Yeah, you know, I was definitely more mindful, I feel, this year more than probably past years, or maybe I'm just caught up in the moment. But I just feel like this was definitely a very memorable Olympics. I feel like I caught myself watching many events from not only the basketball games, but from some of the horse racing, the horse tracks, the rowboats, everything. I was just very intrigued by the whole thing. But yeah, shout out to Team USA, obviously. You know, like, unfortunately for Team USA, they have this stigma when they go to the Olympics. They're really in a lose-lose scenario. Because you're expected to win, and if you were to get bounced, then it's like the end of the world. You know what I mean? So you really can't win if you're Team USA, and I'm glad that a guy like Kevin Durant rose up to the challenge and did lead this team to the gold medal, because he was clearly the MVP, you know, on the floor. You saw it, and I heard how you try to give Dame Lillard credit for, you know, setting a tone and a mentality for this team, and I think you're right. You know, we did find out that he was somewhat injured during the run, so I'm glad that even though he wasn't impactful on the court, that him even just coaching the guys and just getting in the guys' head, making sure that they're there. Yeah, you know, just coach on the court, you know, tell them to do this, do that, yada, yada, yada. You know, Jason Tatum, another guy that really performed very big in that closeout game, too. I believe he dropped 19 in that effort, giving KD that backup that he needed to make sure that we beat the French, because the French were in it for a little bit, but nonetheless, we pulled away. We're America, you know, that's what we do. We do basketball and hamburgers, bro. That's what we do. But listen, I'm very excited, like I said, for KD, because I feel like there was a lot of pressure. And I remember I ended the show the other day on a somewhat salty note, because I was like, oh, if he don't get the gold, you know, LeBron's going to be like, eh. But, you know, and I said that as a mild LeBron fan. I know we have a lot of LeBron enthusiasts that really was right in that wave. And I give KD all the credit in the world, because I love KD as a talent. But if he didn't get the gold, you know, a lot of the LeBron fanboys is going to give KD that smoke.
Oh, yeah, 100%, because the last time Durant won gold was with LeBron. So if you don't manage to do it without the GOAT, you know, they're going to look at you a little funny. But listen, JJ, this entire team, from Zach LaVine to Chris Middleton to Devin Booker, every single game, every single player made an impact, whether it was Zach LaVine on offense and defense, because Zach LaVine finished in the Olympics. Out of all the players in the Olympics, he finished with a top five player efficiency rating. So he was PER. So he was doing good in the Olympics. So I'm happy for them. They did what they had to do. Popovich, he at the beginning, we were looking at him funny. We were looking at him funny. We were looking like, yo, Popovich, what you doing? Like, do you need the players to take over? And look what he did. He was able to make the right adjustments. And that lineup that they had with Jrue Holiday and Draymond Green on the court at the same time, nobody could have done anything. Nobody.
Yeah, and I know these guys are going to go back, you know, game one back of the regular season, pick up a couple fouls early. Like, damn, I missed that Olympic basketball defense. I was like, just press up on this guy. Damn, ref. But nonetheless, you know, very excited. Shout out to Team USA one more time, getting 100%. Us the most, not only the most gold medals, edging China by one. Or was it Japan? No, it was China, right?
It was China. Yeah, they edged China by one gold. We had 39, medal.
They had 38, but we had the most medals overall. So shout out to all our athletes. Please get back home safe. I'm pretty sure they're all exhausted from being in Tokyo for this amount of time. Get home, take a nap, and get your psychological clock back in order, because the whole time difference will really throw you off after a while. So I hope they just get it back in motion. Yeah. But nonetheless, I was very excited yesterday because the whole Hall of Fame ceremony was happening. It was beautiful to see guys that I loved growing up, you know, especially being a Colts fan, seeing guys like not only Peyton Manning get inducted, but Edgerrin James also got in. Troy Polamalu from the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, anybody knows him. He's the guy with the big hair that does the awesome head and shoulders commercials. We're on the commercials. An even better player on the field. Anybody who's never seen that interception where he just like grabs it right before it hits the floor, do yourself and go on YouTube and watch that. It was awesome. But it already came and went, and people are already talking about the next Hall of Fame class, who's going to be highlighted by a lot of receivers. We got Aquan Boldin, Steve Smith Sr., and Andre Johnson as the headlines. And Tony Romo's on there too, Sander. He's going to be on that ballot, but that's going to be a debate for another day because that's a spicy topic already. And so people are going crazy over Tony Romo being on that, but I digress. That's for another topic. But listen, these are guys that we saw growing up in their primes. You know, I loved all these guys at some point. I used them in Madden. They were all good. But nonetheless, out of these three guys, who do you think has the best chance of entering on their first try?
Damn, Deji, you put me in a tough position because, like you touched on, we grew up playing Madden. We grew up watching football. We grew up loving every single one of these guys. We saw all of them going to NFL at the same time.
Can I just say, though, before you get deep in your soliloquy, that it's really nice now seeing the Hall of Fame classes that are following after this one and even a couple months prior to this. This is our generation that we got to witness, that we got to, like, really eyeball test these guys. And we could be like, oh, we witnessed these guys playing, so we know what a Hall of Famer looks like. Like, now we got rifle eyeballs. We don't, you know, we couldn't really dissect guys like Lombardi and guys like Bart Starr, quarterbacks like that. I mean, yeah, we got YouTube and stuff, but you're right. Like, these are guys that, you know, we got to see in live action. But nonetheless, who you got?
Like I said, Jay, I'm torn because I love all three of these guys nonetheless. But out of the three guys, it's like pulling hairs, but nonetheless, I have to pick one, all right? And I'm going to go with Andre Johnson, okay? And the reason why I go with Andre Johnson, because all three of them have the yards. And Anquan Boldin even has a Super Bowl ring with two appearances. But the phenomenal thing about Andre Johnson when I watched him was, can you remember who his first quarterback was when he was entering the league? Okay, I'll wait.
I think was it Matt Schaub?
I think it was Carr.
It was Carr. Either
Carr or Schaub. But nonetheless, how good are those two quarterbacks?
Yeah, no, they ain't memorable.
So, but when you look at Houston, you know, I remember watching a documentary on Andre Johnson, and Andre Johnson talked about his appearances at the Pro Bowl and him being the only Houston Texan on the Pro Bowl roster. And that just speaks volumes to the alpha male, the talent, the phenomenon that Andre Johnson was. Just straight brute strength, one of the strongest receivers of all time. I mean, do you want to see the Courtland Finnegan highlight? I mean, I don't really need to say much. You know what I mean? Ask Courtland Finnegan how strong Andre Johnson is, okay?
Yeah.
But strength, speed, can go up there and get it. Beautiful route running. Well, he was most known for his route running and his cuts. But just straight brute and his phenomenal knowledge of the position. The man knew where you were going to go before he got you there. That way he knew how to make his second step. and get wide open against guys like Matt Schaub and Carr. And I mean, but before Deshaun Watson got there, you know, he was still playing with.
I believe did he at one point have Brock Osweiler, or was he out of town?
Brock Osweiler. They're damn right. He had Brock Osweiler on there. Jesus Christ, Jacob, I don't even remember the quarterbacks.
Listen, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I found this photo and I wanted to share it with you because I want to tell you that somebody wasted this. Somebody wasted this talent right here. Check this out.
Oh my God.
You got a prime Andre Johnson and a baby Nuke.
DeAndre Hopkins couldn't do nothing.
Look at that. Obviously the Texans' best two receivers on their depth chart. By far, but nonetheless, it just shows you that the Texans at least had the capability of drafting solid players, but as an organization, has just failed to maintain them long term.
Yes, and when you're playing receiver, guys, it's so dependent on the quarterback. Your production is so based on the quarterback and making sure the quarterback can get you the ball when you're open. And the fact that he was able to play phenomenally, okay, and really be the only reason why Houston Texan football was on the map before J.J. Watt got there, okay?
Yeah.
Andre Johnson was literally, when I say he was the only, it's like him being alone in that Will Smith room, like, damn, I'm the only Houston Texan here. Like, I see three Steelers. I see Palumalu, Ryan Clark, Ben Roethlisberger. I see Peyton, Harrison, Reggie Wayne. I see two, three players from each team, and I'm the only one. And granted, Steve Smith was phenomenal, over 10,000 receiving yards. Anquan Boldin as well, over 10,000 receiving yards, over hundreds and hundreds of catches. Listen, and like I said, Anquan Boldin got to two Super Bowls and won one. But the, you know what we say, when in order to get to a Super Bowl, you need to have it's not just you. You have to. It's very dependent on the defense, the quarterback. Anquan Boldin went out there and played with guys like Kurt Warner when he was still great. You know, he went out there and played with Joe Flacco that year that he won the Super Bowl. You know, so I understand the argument for Anquan Boldin because he went to a few Super Bowls. But my man Andre Johnson, if you want to stack receiver against receiver, look at the quarterbacks that Andre Johnson had, and he still was able to do what he did. It's kind of like the same argument we have with the best player in the best wide receiver in the NFLs right now. Like, you know, a lot of us say DeAndre Hopkins, and look at the quarterbacks that he was playing with before Watson. It's the same thing with Andre Johnson. I feel like if Andre Johnson, you know, even though he did have a few years with the Indianapolis Colts, I think he had one or two seasons with you guys. But, I mean, that wasn't the Andre Johnson that we grew up watching, you know. Whereas if Andre Johnson had a prime quarterback, a legit arm, man, this man would have been breaking all types of records. That's why I say, based off his criteria and his credentials, and you look at his entire career as a whole, You cannot deny this man a first ballot Hall of Famer because he's that talented. He was that type of talent for Houston.
Yeah, man, I totally agree. And I was hoping you were gonna pick Andre, but I figured, listen, out of these three guys, who's gonna get picked up in the park first? Obviously, it's Andre Johnson. I'm gonna definitely double down on you on that one because he was definitely phenomenal. And as a Colts fan, I had to see him twice a year, and I used to see him just pick apart my corners all day. Vontae Davis. Remember Vontae Davis? How good he was? He wasn't good enough to guard Andre Johnson, I'll tell you that much. And if anybody knows what it was with the smoke with Andre Johnson, you mentioned the Courtland Finnegan incident. Anybody who watched football knows how classic that was. Don't get up on the grill on that man's man because he definitely will give his thing. Connor Reeves says hello, guys. Hi, mommy.
Thank you for watching
the show. Peter Connor says, Susan says hi. It's my in-laws. Thank you, guys. Hello from the start of the passport, guys. But nonetheless, guys, But, you know, you touched up on Andre Johnson, so I'm going to let you shine on that one. But I'm going to give a ballot for a second guy. And people probably think it's Baldwin, but no, I'm going to give it to the smaller guy, Steve Smith. Because even though Steve Smith lacked the size that Anquan Boldin brought to the table, he had with speed, athleticism, and most of all, attitude. Because this guy, he was probably the smallest receiver in the that was mostly impactful, maybe since Steve Largent from the Seahawks back in the day. But he did anything that any receiver could do. He could run routes, exactly, a pit bull. He's more like a, you know how they call the honey badger. He's probably like the honey badger of wide receivers. He was like that. He was really pesky. He had a little Hines Ward to him too, where he really tried to block you, even though he was small. He was going to try to take your legs out. He didn't care. He was going to try to do the best thing he could for his team. And I really love that about him. You know, he had great numbers too. Like you said, he was also a 10,000-yard guy. But listen, he had, look at it, he got two times first team all pro, which is something that neither of these guys accomplished, if I read this correctly. Actually, no, Andre Johnson made it three times. So I apologize about that. But Aquan Boldin never reached the first team all pro status, which is a very prestigious award to get. When you can be one of the top wide receivers in this league throughout a whole course of your season, it's something that's not to be slept on. And, you know, we made the debate, and I'm pretty sure back in the day when we talked sports, obviously we grew up together and talked sports, but there was the combination of Aquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald. And I was like, well, Aquan's good, but is Larry better? And I think with over time, we're going to say that Larry was obviously the better receiver. Larry's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer without a debate. We probably won't have this conversation if there's another receiver with Larry in his class, because he's just going to be cemented. That's how good he is. It doesn't matter who else is in that class for receiver. Larry's just that good.
Yes, and when you talk about Steve Smith, like he's one of the, you know, historically smaller receivers that was able to be still dominant, a straight pit bull, not afraid of nobody. If you ever listen to those YouTube videos, those mic'd up videos with Steve Smith, they're a fun watch. The man was a pit bull, not afraid of nobody, get in your face. And you know, he helped DeLone get to a Super Bowl. Granted, he lost to the almighty Patriots. But he was still able to play a phenomenal piece in the Super Bowl. So, listen, I'm not mad at the Steve Smith debate either. I feel like that out of the three, I feel comfortable enough saying it goes Andre first, Steve Smith two, and Anquan Boldin three. And I'm not taking away from any of the other two. I just feel like this talent-wise, you know, Steve Smith and Andre Johnson are a little bit more talented than Anquan Boldin. And when it comes to Steve Smith and Andre Johnson, Andre Johnson got the sides that Steve Smith lacked, you know? But not taking away nothing from Steve Smith. He was still a phenomenal receiver.
Absolutely. And I love all these guys, and I'm glad that, you know, they're all going to have a chance to make
the Hall of Fame. Hope they all three go in.
Yeah, now they probably won't make it. I mean, if Tony Romo snubs a spot from one of these guys, that's going to be a conversation in itself, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there, Sander. Yes, we will. But speaking of Hall of Fame, we have a guy that's trying to make a little Hall of Fame conversation of himself. And that guy, your boy Cyril Gane, came out there and put the paws on that boy Derrick Lewis, which I never thought I'd see, because Derrick Lewis is so damn big. You look at a guy like that, you're like, that guy, nobody could beat that guy up. But no, Cyril Gane came out there, and in the third round, he put the paws on his man, and he got him in the TKO. And now he's 10-0, he's the interim champ at the moment. And right now, people are saying, Sander, that he could possibly beat Francis Ngannou for that belt. And, you know, I think that's a spicy conversation in itself. I can't wait to see that fight. And, you know, I saw a video clip of Francis Ngannou before the fight. He was just chilling. I don't know if you saw the video. I saw it on Twitter. He was just chilling with us. He was like, yeah, I'm really enjoying myself. But you already know what it is. I'm that guy. I'm the king. That's what he said exactly. And it was an awesome moment. And I can't wait for those two guys to clash. But nonetheless, do you think that Gane has a chance to beat Ngannou and really put himself in that elite class?
Oh, 100%. Does he have a chance to beat Ngannou? Oh, yes, bro. Let's not forget, these guys have been training partners from the beginning. Yeah. When Francis Ngannou first came into the UFC, started training in France, he was training with Gane. And listen, guys, this is kind of like two titans just destined to meet in the future. These are like storybook type of endings where two guys start off in the gutter, train together, become boys, and, you know, come up together. And now they're challenging each other for the title. It doesn't get better than a backstory like that. And Cyril Gane is one of the most phenomenal talents that I've seen at heavyweight since I've started watching UFC, since like the age of 10 and not 9 or 10 years old. I've never seen a heavyweight move like a man like Israel Adesanya. His movement is just so smooth, Jay. He's so big and he's so chiseled. You think he's
a titan? The way he moves, you wouldn't think that he could move that nimbly. He's so fluid.
He moves like Jose Aldo. He's like in and out. And he has the Lyoto Machida karate stance at heavyweight. Hands down, you know, moving back and forth. I'm thinking, dude, if Lewis catches you once, you're going down. You're going Nate. You understand? But yeah. he fought Derrick Lewis the way you only can fight Derrick Lewis. Fight him with movement, hit him from places that he can't reach because of his lack of speed. And not for nothing, I understand that my man Jace was talking on throwing jabs, talking about Derrick Lewis was out there training hard and running and out there. Listen, I don't care how much you run. If you can't last past the third round, because Derrick Lewis is a three-round fighter, if you can't last the third round, you're not going to be in championship fights for long, and you're going to gas out. And listen, Ciryl Gane had him gassed by the third round, just straight up keeping him on his feet, and then the leg kicks, just everything, the complete package for Ciryl Gane. Ciryl Gane has the ability and the straight up potential to be one of the best UFC heavyweights of all time, because he's already 10-0. He's already an interim champion, about to fight Francis Ngannou for the championship belt. And let's just say he wins, or let's just say he beats Francis. You know what's next? John Jones. Okay, and after John Jones, let's just throw, you know, if let's just hand in the kid wins, and let's just get him to Hall of Fame record. After John Jones, Stipe's gonna want some. If you beat Stipe, look at that track record. Look at the record to get to the championship and then to maintain it. That's Derrick Lewis, Francis Ngannou, John Jones, and a possible Stipe matchup. If this man can,
that's a tough gauntlet, Sandry.
That's 100%, crazy. 100%. But guess what? As great as Francis Ngannou is with that power, he's not half the athlete that Ciryl Gane is, just based off movement and the way of. I think if you go based on fighter skill, Ciryl Gane is a better fighter because he can go to the ground. He can.
I'm gonna need to keep that same energy because I'm gonna want Skittles that night.
That's fine. And I'm gonna go with Ciryl Gane against Francis. I'm gonna go with Ciryl Gane.
I got Francis,
because
baby.
I haven't seen a heavyweight move like that, baby. And let me tell you something about the heavyweight division. The guys that that show movement, the guys that are quicker than the other guys, 9 times out of 10 get the dub. All right. So I can't believe that I'm seeing a talent like Gane, JJ. I thought I would never see a heavyweight move this way. I thought we were going to see Francis Ngannou dominate for years to come. But seeing Gane come up the way he's come up the past 2 years, it's put the UFC heavyweight division on notice. And it's basically I understand that Francis Ngannou made that video of, oh, he's the king. Yeah, you the king for now, my friend. Because guys like Ciryl Gane, those are problems. Those are problems, okay? And I don't think Francis Ngannou wants that problem right now. So does he have the potential of becoming an all-time great? If he can manage to get this dub against Francis and get the matchup against John Jones, if he beats John Jones, you could start putting him in the conversation as one of the top heavyweights. Because I still feel like in order for you to be the greatest, you have to beat the greatest. And still in my books, the greatest heavyweight of all time is Stipe Miocic. So if he could go ahead and, you know, run the table and beat a Stipe, then I'll go ahead and give him the title as the best heavyweight of all time.
Yeah, no, and I think actually you got it right the first time when you thought that Francis Ngannou was going to run for a long time, because I think when they do meet again, Francis is going to put the paws on this guy, Gane. And I really like Luke. I do like Gane. I think you're absolutely right. For his size, he's extremely athletic and very nimble. And I like what he brings to the table, especially at that heavyweight division. It's something that you don't see very often. But listen, with one of these things about being a heavyweight champ, and this doesn't even just go with this to heavyweights. This goes down to the lights and the middleweights. And it doesn't matter. When you're that top guy, one of the qualities that you need to have is not only skill, but you need the skill to know that you could go deep into these fights. And Francis Ngannou is not Derrick Lewis. Francis Ngannou is definitely 100% capable of going a fourth round, a fifth round, and not need be it. And another thing that Ngannou has over Derrick Lewis is just the mindset. They're just two different mindset of guys. They approach the game a lot differently, the game being the octagon, the UFC of the fight game that they are. You know, so like I do think that stylistic, it's a better fight, honestly, than this one. I think this was kind of like he was kind of like a, I don't want to call Derrick Lewis like a poor man's Ngannou, but he kind of is in a way in my book. Like, he's like a poor man's guy. Ngannou's a different problem. He's just a more polished version, but I think it will end up being a great fight nonetheless.
Yeah, no, Francis Ngannou come. I mean, when they both fought, it was probably the worst fight in heavyweight history. Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis did win that fight, but it was such a bad fight. But the difference between Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis is kind of like a counterpuncher type of dude. He waits for you to open up for him to, you know, bring that hammer of Thor and knock you into another dimension. Whereas Francis Ngannou now is the hunter. He hunts you down. He'll walk you down. But, you know, like I said, Jay, as great as Francis Ngannou is, when we say we have never seen a heavyweight move like Ciryl Gane, it's because we've never seen a heavyweight move like him. And guys like that who can move like him and have a ground game, who's not afraid to take the fight to the ground, unless Francis Ngannou was a black belt in BJJ, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, then I'm not worried. But since he's not, I'm more worried for Francis, because Francis has only one way to win this fight, and that's standing. Ciryl Gane could win this in multiple ways. He could beat you up. He could win you with points. He can beat you on the ground. He can submit you. So there's more ways for Ciryl than there is for Francis. That's all I'm saying. But it will still be a great fight.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, Sander. And like I said, I can't wait. I'm not sure which UFC that's going to end up being, but Skittles on that one.
Skittles.
For sure. I already got it. Francis Ngannou, let's go. Nonetheless, and it is Monday, and I'm very excited because you know it's time for our Blazing Predictions update. You already know, brought to you by Rocky Hill Accountants with over 35 years of combined experience. Make sure you guys have licensed professionals handling your financials. Make sure you guys make sure you ask for Haiti and let her know that her friends at CMG sent her, and especially the boys from the Stir the Pot crew. We got your back, girl. Nonetheless, you had a little prediction about this UFC fight, and it might have came true, huh?
Yeah, it might have. I mean, my guy didn't last the entire fight, but he really didn't need the entire fight. like you said, it's rare that you see Derek Lewis just get punked out like that. It's just he straight up quit. But Ciryl Gane is the real deal, JJ. We keep on talking about this. I don't want to sound redundant, but his movement is just I've never seen it. It's he's literally the unicorn of the heavyweight division. A man that big who can move that well, who can take the fight to the ground with no sense of urgency in the world. Like he feels no pressure. He feels no pressure. And I'm excited for this man because he's going to fight now his longtime training partner in Francis. And we got Skittles on it, baby. And I'm anticipating with. I can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be a very, you know, I feel like drama-filled fight too. Because like you said, these guys train together. So they know their weaknesses and know their strengths. And it's crazy to see themselves in a hostile environment, having to put that against each other. And it's going to be really a chess match between two. It's really Goliath versus Goliath, because there ain't no David in this fight. They're both Goliaths, and somebody's going to fall hard most likely, and we're going to be all for it, because thank you, Uncle Dana. You make it happen, and we love it. Believe it. Yeah. But listen, I had a prediction too, and I thought I was going to have a good birthday, because just today I turned 30. It was supposed to be a good day for me. You know, everybody's sending me love, and I appreciate it. So I went to a Yankee game, and hoping the Yankees will win, because they've been a little hot. That from the last 10 games, they were 8-2. I'm like, things are cool. I'm on my way to Yankee Stadium, right? I'm in the car. I swear to God. I'm like maybe 15 minutes away from the stadium itself, and I get the alert on my phone that says Anthony Rizzo played on the IL because he got COVID. I was like, oh, of course Anthony Rizzo, the one guy I want to see today, gets COVID and I won't see him today. Damn it! And then I'm all right, whatever. I still go to the game. I have a great time. I'm with my fiance and my cousin and his beautiful wife. You know, we're over there. We're having a great time. And the Yankees just give us a terrible show. They go out there and get shut out 2-0 by the Mariners. And granted, they won 3-1 over the weekend, so we won the series. But I was there in the building for Sunday's game, and they got shut out, and I was so upset, Sander.
Yeah, man, it sucks when you go out there, you plan a day on your birthday, and you're expecting a win, and bam, they just put out a donut. Jay, I mean, hey, what's going on? That's usually what happens, man. It's usually what happens. Yeah.
And, you know, I get it. You won the first three, so maybe you took Sunday off just to kind of relax. But nonetheless, I wanted to double my day. The only thing that made it better is that on our way back home, I got the alert that the Red Sox lost to the Blue Jays. So that made me feel a little better.
Nah, you definitely won, man. if for those of you who don't follow JJ on social media, if you look at that fate that he had, the Dominican sushi, oh, he won. I don't care that the Yankees lost. He won.
Yeah, no, I definitely won the weekend. Like I said, I turned 30, and I feel very blessed to turn 30. And I got a lot of love sent my way, and thank you to everybody that did send their love. But, yeah, you know, Yankees are the only ones that let me down yesterday, and I was very upset. I really was.
Get them next time.
Very well. We're Stir the Pot Sports. Make sure you guys follow us on Facebook and Instagram pages at Stir the Pot Sports. Make sure you guys check out the Twitter at Pot Sports, and make sure you guys check out the Twitch and the Twitch.tv/Clover Crest Media Group. Check out the website for all our episodes on their clovercrestmedia.com/Stir the Pot Sports, and give us a listening to on your morning commutes or afternoon or whenever you're driving. Spotify on Spotify or Apple Podcasts under CMG Sports. Stir the Pot Sports will be there. Again, I got to switch that up a little bit, Sandra, because I feel like I say sports a lot in that last sentence.
How about you just say, listen, just type in Stir the Pot in all the platforms and follow us.
Listen, we're that popular now. If you were to Google search us, you will find us. So it's pretty cool. You know what I mean? It's kind of impressive, I guess, for us, but it's cool.
You can't miss that beautiful Grand Theft Auto style logo, baby. You just can't miss it.
Yes, nonetheless, man, very excited. If Luka got his money today, and I got to put the picture up again, because when I found it, I was like, listen, that is a freaking $1 million smile right there. No, correction. That's a $207 million smile. That's what that is right there. And I'm very happy for the young man. 22 years old with a $207 million money tree, huh? Damn.
Where did we go wrong, man?
I'm JJ Vargas, my brother, Sandra Sanchez. We'll catch you on Wednesday.
Yes, sir. Damn.